Don't you see that you're doing the same thing Monsieur Benoit did to you?
Ruby stared.
What? He refused to see you for what you were. And you're doing the same. You think you're protecting me, but you're taking away my right to be who I am.
Charlotte,
no. Please, let me finish. I can be doing something, Ruby. I can help Lucien. He has offered to teach me to forge documents. I feel like I can't survive this war by merely being a prisoner in this apartment. I've tried to respect your wishes so far, but you must let me go. You must let me help. It's what I'm meant to do. I know it.
But you can't think I'm like Marcel. He refused to see me as an equal. He thought I was nothing. Charlotte didn't say anything, although Ruby could hear the accusation in her silence. It stung, not least of all because there was some truth to it.
I've never for a moment believed that you're nothing, Charlotte, Ruby said after a moment. I know you're resourceful and smart. It's that I can't bear the thought of something happening to you. I love you, and I'm just trying to keep you safe.
And you have... You've given me a home. You've given me a life.
Charlotte paused and leaned forward.
And I'll owe you forever for that. But if we want to defeat darkness, we must find our own way to the light. We have to follow our hearts and accept the danger. It's my turn to fight, Ruby. Please, try to see that.
Ruby stared at the girl for a long time. She could already see her slipping away, but it was no longer in her hands. She knew that now. She saw herself in Charlotte, and it scared her.
You must promise me that you won't do anything foolish. You must never let your guard down. The danger is so much greater for you than it is for me.
Something changed in Charlotte's face, and Ruby knew the girl understood she was letting her go.
I know, she whispered, but don't you see? That's why I need to help. France has turned its back on people like me, but I can't turn my back on France. I still believe in the goodness of mankind. I believe that things will change, but only if we are brave enough to stand up.
And Lucien will be with you? He will be there to look out for you when I'm not.
Lucien will be with me, always.
And so Ruby did her best to leave Charlotte be, and in the next few weeks, it became a bit easier. Charlotte disappeared with Lucien every few days for several hours at a time, and although Ruby's stomach was always in knots as she waited for the girl to come home, she also knew it was the right thing. There was a lightness to Charlotte that hadn't been there before, and Ruby recognized it as a sense of purpose. Charlotte was finally playing a role in saving herself. It was just how Ruby had felt when she began work on the escape line. And although Ruby worried, too, about Charlotte getting her heart broken in the midst of everything else, she also had the feeling that Lucien wasn't planning to hurt her. More than once, Ruby had seen Charlotte's eyes fill with tears over something, most often a mention of her parents, and Lucien was immediately at her side, comforting her, before Ruby herself could react. He was in tune with her in the most rare and wonderful way. Ruby had been wrong about him, and the realization taught her a lesson. When she'd first seen Lucien, he had seemed dangerous, the kind of boy her own parents would have warned her to stay away from when she was Charlotte's age. But if there was one thing she had learned, it was that you could never judge a book by its cover. Lucien was a much better person than Marcel had been, certainly, and Ruby had dropped everything and flown across the ocean to be with him.
What if there had been a Lucien right under her nose all along, and she had simply neglected to see him?
Would her life have turned out differently? But she couldn't think like that. If she'd followed a different path, she wouldn't have known Charlotte, or Thomas, or any of the people here in Paris who'd made her proud to be fighting for something bigger than herself.
Autumn had painted the trees in the brilliant hues of sunset, and as Ruby strolled toward the Seine on a sunny November afternoon, she could almost believe that life was normal. It was a trick of the light, but on days like this, when the neighborhoods bustled and the Germans weren't filling the streets, Ruby could imagine that this was the Paris she had dreamed of. This was the Paris that Hemingway had written about a generation ago, the Paris that had tantalized her from afar. She crossed the river at the Pont de l'Alma, marveling as she always did at the way the Eiffel Tower sliced into the bright blue sky off to the right, and made her way down the Avenue Bosquet. She turned left on the Rue Saint-Dominique and right on the Rue Amélie, intending to walk by the old building just once, as she did every Monday. She had mostly lost hope that she'd ever see Charlotte's parents or Thomas or any of the other pilots again, but to cease trying would be to admit defeat. So it had become part of her weekly routine to walk briskly along the narrow street that had once been her home, pausing only briefly outside the old building to look for signs that someone was trying to find her. She never knew quite what she was searching for. A note? A handkerchief tied to a terrace? It was a fool's errand, but it soothed her somehow. As she passed, she always said a prayer for Charlotte's parents, for her own lost baby, and for the safety of all the pilots she had helped. And this day was no different. In fact, she was so lost in her own thoughts that she almost didn't hear her name being hissed from across the street.
Ruby!
There it was again, an urgent whisper coming from the shadows of a doorway on the other side of the lane. She turned in the direction of the voice, cursing herself for being careless enough to come here like this. She could be putting everything in jeopardy. She took a few steps backward, prepared to make a hasty retreat. But then, the figure in the doorway emerged into the crisp afternoon light, and she froze. The man in the shadows was thinner than he had been 2 years before, his face darker, his eyes more intense. But she would have known him anywhere.
Thomas?
He began to walk toward her, and for a moment she couldn't move. It felt like an impossible mirage. Surely, the handsome pilot wasn't once again standing in front of her, smiling that perfect smile, looking at her with relief and tenderness written across his face.
"It's you,"
she whispered, a warm glow spreading over her whole body. But then common sense kicked in and unfroze her, reminding her of where they were, who they were. Quickly, she motioned him back into the shadows. He paused and retreated toward the doorway he'd been standing in. She scanned the street for passers-by. They were alone, but for how long? She crossed the street quickly, and then she was just inches from him. This couldn't be happening. She knew she'd have to get him someplace safe. But for now, time stood still. She reached out to touch his face, her fingertips grazing the stubble along his jaw. She longed to kiss him, to fall into his arms, but she couldn't do it here, not in public.
"Ruby,"
he murmured, and it was his deep, familiar voice, the one she'd never really expected to hear again, that finally snapped her back to reality. What if he didn't feel the same way she did? After all, it had been 2 years. Anything could have happened in that time. The fact that he'd returned wasn't necessarily an indication of his feelings. It could just as easily have been that he knew nowhere else to go. Suddenly self-conscious, she dropped her hand back to her side.
"Thomas, what are you doing here?"
"I was shot down over Saint-Omer a few days ago. I came as quickly as I could."
"But the escape line has been compromised. Didn't you hear?"
"Yes, but I had to see you. I had to make sure you were all right."
His smile faltered.
"But no one answered at your apartment, and I began to fear the worst."
"You were worried about me?"
He reached for her hands, pulling her closer. He was cold, and she had the sudden strange thought that she'd like to draw him a warm bath.
"Ruby, of course."
"But why?" He looked startled.
"I've thought of you every single day. Have you thought of me?"
"Yes," she whispered.
They stared at each other for another long moment, and finally she believed. The impossible had happened. He had come back to her. But she was being careless. An old neighbor could recognize her, or worse, a collaborator or a Nazi could spot Thomas in his uniform.
"Come,"
she said, abruptly breaking the loaded silence between them and pulling her hand from his. "I must get you somewhere safe. Are you injured?"
"Nothing like last time."
"Very well."
She forced herself to be practical, to push her feelings aside. What mattered now was getting him to safety. "We'll need to walk a bit. To get to my new apartment, we must cross the Seine, which means you'll be out in the open, and I'm afraid your disguise isn't very foolproof. So instead of crossing at the Pont de l'Alma, we'll work our way south, and then west on side streets, and we'll cross at the Pont de Passy. There's a lower likelihood of Nazi presence there, and it'll be easier to stick to the shadows. All right?" He nodded and listened carefully as she explained the route she had in mind. It would take an extra 30 minutes, which would expose him for longer, but she couldn't simply march him through a neighborhood swarming with Germans. Once we get there, you must stay in our courtyard until nightfall. I can't bring you inside in broad daylight, just in case we're followed. I can't put Charlotte in danger.
Your neighbor? The one whose mother I helped?
Yes. She lives with me now. He looked grim.
Her parents are gone?
Deported more than a year ago. We've had no word.
Ruby, I'm so sorry.
I am too. She reached for his hand, lingering longer than she should have. What if she was just a woman standing on the beautiful streets of Paris with a man she loved? It was a wonderful fantasy, but it could never be true, not as long as the war raged around them. She let go. We must go now, before someone sees us. She was acutely aware of Thomas several paces behind her as she headed west along the Rue de Grenelle. She wound her way southeast, down smaller side streets, until they'd cleared the Champ de Mars and the École Militaire, two places that were often bustling with Nazis. Then she turned right, and right again as she wove back toward the river. She looked back a few times and was relieved to see Thomas hugging the shadows, his head down. A few people stopped and stared, but they passed very few German soldiers, and the ones they did see were too preoccupied with their own conversations to give them a second glance. When they finally turned onto the Rue de l'Astérie, Ruby nodded toward the entrance to the courtyard and let herself into the building through the front door. She watched from her window as Thomas sat down in the shade, his back against the building. He was here. He was really here. Now there was nothing to do but wait. Charlotte had left a note, saying that she'd be spending a few hours with Lucien that afternoon, so Ruby was alone in the apartment. As she waited for night to fall, she felt like a giddy schoolgirl, changing into a cotton dress she hadn't worn in more than a year, and rummaging through a small box of odds and ends until she found a stubby red lipstick that she'd put away after Marcel had died. Daylight had vanished by 5:30, and there was a soft knock at the door. Ruby opened it to find Thomas standing there, his cheeks pink from the evening chill. For a moment, they just stared at each other. And then his arms were around her, and his mouth was on hers. Ruby pulled him into the apartment and fumbled with the lock, and then she found herself pressed against the door, her whole body on fire.
"I've missed you, Ruby," he murmured, drawing back to gaze into her eyes.
"I've missed you, too."
"I thought of you every time I flew over France."
"But why? I'm just a woman who helped you long ago, aren't I?" He kissed her again.
"You're the person I think of each time I take off. You're my good luck charm. I've spent the last 2 years not knowing if you were dead or alive. Standing here in front of you now feels like a miracle."
"I think of you all the time too, Thomas." She wanted to lead him to her bedroom, to feel his body against hers the way she'd hardly dared imagine. But Charlotte would be home soon. Besides, Thomas had been walking for days and was covered in grime. Surely he'd want to feel like himself again. "Why don't you freshen up? I've drawn you a bath and laid out a fresh set of clothes for you."
"Your husband's?"
"No, I don't have any of his things anymore. I keep spare clothes on hand now in case pilots are sent my way." His smile faltered, and he took a small step back.
"So there have been others you've helped, others like me."
"Thomas," she said softly, holding his gaze. "There is no one like you." Chapter 32. November 1943. While Thomas bathed, Ruby paced the apartment. She couldn't stop thinking about the feel of his body, the way his mouth had lingered on hers. When he emerged 30 minutes later, freshly shaven and dressed in gray slacks and a white shirt, he looked like a different person. His dark hair was still damp and curled at the ends, framing his chiseled face perfectly.
"You're staring," he said softly, smiling at her.
She looked away, embarrassed. "I was just thinking that it must feel nice to be clean after your long journey."
"Oh, is that all you were thinking?"
His tone was light, teasing. I might also have been thinking that you are even more handsome than I remember. His smile widened.
So you have been thinking of me?
All the time. She took a deep breath. We had a pilot here in January who said he knew you. John Payne? He was captured in Urunyi soon after.
I heard about Urunyi. Poor Payne. He was here.
I couldn't believe how relieved I felt when he told me you were still alive, Thomas. I had no way of knowing, although I had the strangest feeling that I would have sensed it if you were gone. He took a few steps closer to her, until they were standing just inches apart. He grazed her cheek with his thumb, as if he couldn't quite believe she was real.
And you've continued to work on the escape line, Ruby.
Until the arrests in Urunyi? We've been inactive since the winter. I'm very sorry, Thomas. I don't have any way to get you out of France right now.
I know.
And you still came to me.
I had to.
They stared at each other for a moment. I suppose you could try to venture out on your own, since you've made it out of France before. Or, she paused and glanced up at him before returning her gaze to the floor. Or you could stay here until we can find you a safe way out.
But won't I be putting you in danger?
She took a deep breath and looked into his eyes. Any risk would be worth it, just to have you here.
You mean that?
But perhaps it's foolish of me to suggest. He didn't wait for her to finish. He pulled her into his arms, covering her mouth with his. When their lips met, she had the sudden, strange sensation that she was floating. He folded her in closer, and she could feel his body pressing against hers as his tongue softly parted her lips. She let out a small, unintentional moan, and he started to back away. But she grabbed his collar and drew him closer. She didn't want this to stop. Ever. But then there was the sound of the front door opening and closing, and they both pulled away, startled. Thomas? Charlotte was framed in the doorway, her mouth hanging open as she stared at them. Lucien was behind her, his eyebrows arched in surprise.
Yes. Hello, Charlotte,
Thomas said, taking a step back from Ruby.
Lovely to see you again.
What are you doing here? Charlotte asked.
Don't you think we'd better go inside before someone sees us?
Lucien hurried her into the living room and shut the door.
Hello, he said to Thomas. I'm Lucien, Charlotte's friend, and you, it appears, are Ruby's friend.
Yes, Thomas said in French, clearly still struggling to regain his composure.
Nice to meet you. I'm Thomas. Thomas,
Lucien asked. The pilot. Thomas raised an eyebrow at Ruby and smiled.
Indeed.
Lucien grinned.
Well then, welcome back.
Over the next several weeks, life changed for everyone inside the apartment on the Rue de la Série. Ruby was happier than she'd ever been. She was in love, and she couldn't bear the thought that she'd have to let Thomas go once again. But she knew that Lucien was making inquiries about escape routes, and that as soon as they found one, Thomas would be on his way. Each day together could be the last. They'd fallen into a routine. In the mornings, Charlotte, Ruby, and Thomas would drink their weak grain coffee and eat small slices of stale bread together. And then Ruby would head out with ration cards, and Charlotte would leave with Lucien. She was officially his assistant now. She came home with ink-stained hands late each afternoon, having spent the day forging papers for Jews in hiding, and people who were part of the resistance. When Ruby returned from standing in hours-long ration lines each day, she'd knock three times on the sliding wall in her bedroom. Thomas would unfold himself from the closet, stretch his hands over his head as he climbed out, and smile that dimpled, crooked smile that always made Ruby's heart melt.
"What's for dinner?" he would ask, winking at her,
and she'd answer with something ridiculous, such as, "Chateaubriand and caviar, of course." They'd spend the next hour or two holding hands and talking until Charlotte arrived home. Ruby couldn't ask Thomas enough questions. She wanted to know everything about him. She delighted in answering his endless questions about her life, too. She told him about her parents, what it had been like to grow up in Southern California, what New York was like in the springtime. He knew now that she hated mushrooms and loved baked pears, that she preferred big band music to jazz, that her favorite movie was Camille, and that she sometimes had nightmares about falling from the edge of a cliff into a black abyss. He, in turn, talked of his childhood in London, the games he used to play with his schoolmates, and the way he missed his mother every day. He told her what it felt like to be 14,000 feet in the air in the tiny cockpit of a Spitfire, how frightened he'd felt the first time he stalled in midair, how he sometimes felt racked with guilt over the German lives he'd taken. Sometimes they didn't talk at all. They would sit on the couch, and then his lips would be on hers, and they'd kiss until Charlotte came home. It never went further than that, though. Ruby had learned to be careful with her heart, and even though she knew she was already deeply in love with him, she worried what would happen once he was gone. Now wasn't the time to be foolhardy about anything. His life was in her hands, as were Charlotte's, and she couldn't do anything to put either of them in jeopardy. She loved them both too much. But everything changed on the fourth Thursday in November. At home in the States, it was Thanksgiving, and Ruby felt dejected all day thinking of her parents, aunts, uncles, and cousins gathered around the dinner table without her, holding hands, and probably praying for her. Did they believe she was dead? Now that the United States was involved in the war, were the American papers filled with news of what was happening here? Could they imagine what her life had become? On a holiday like this, she couldn't help but feel terribly homesick. The lines at the butcher and baker were shorter than usual, and Ruby returned to the apartment more than an hour earlier than she had expected. Charlotte was out for the day, and Thomas looked surprised to see Ruby when she knocked on the hidden closet door. "Did you not make it to the shops?" he asked as he climbed out and followed her into the kitchen. "No, I did." She gestured to the small amount of food she'd placed on the dining table. "I thought perhaps I'd try to prepare something special for us tonight. It's a special holiday back in the United States." She told him about how her family would get together for roast turkey, cranberry sauce, and sweet potatoes. "I miss my family terribly. Of course, I also miss roast turkey. Wouldn't that taste amazing right now?" Thomas drew her into his arms.
"We could use our imaginations. We'll have a feast."
"I do have a few bottles of wine left. Perhaps we can open one tonight."
"That sounds wonderful."
He kissed her long and hard.
"We'll have potatoes for turkey, and this bread for the cranberry sauce.
Someday, when this war is over, you can come to my parents' house for a real Thanksgiving meal."
"I would love that."
Thomas was watching her closely, and she could feel her cheeks turning warm. "I'm sorry," she said. I shouldn't have said that. I know we don't talk about the future."
"I'm very glad you did," Thomas said after a moment.
He pulled her closer.
"I hope you know, Ruby, that it has always been my plan to come back for you after the war ends. It has been since we first met. I will come for you."
He paused and waited for her to meet his gaze.
"If you want me to."
"Of course I do," she whispered. "But I don't want you to feel obligated." He looked surprised.
"Obligated? Ruby, I love you."
"You do?
Can't you see that?"
And then, at once, she could. She'd known it all along, she supposed, but it was easier not to acknowledge it, not to open her eyes. "I love you, too," she whispered.
"Good."
This time, when his lips touched hers, his kiss felt different than it had before. It was tentative, but urgent, and she could taste the question on his tongue. Her answer was to burrow against him, making sure that she wasn't holding back. In a moment, his hands were under her dress, coarse and warm against her skin.
"Ruby,"
he murmured, and she understood that he was asking for her permission to go further. "Yes," she breathed, and then her dress was in a pool on the kitchen floor, followed by his shirt. His hands were all over her body, and her hands on his, and it was like nothing she had ever experienced before. It had certainly never felt like this with Marcel, who relied on the same rapid series of caresses each time, a dance that had clearly been choreographed long before she arrived. With Thomas, though, everything felt new. There was nothing rushed or planned about it. When he picked her up and carried her into the bedroom, she'd never felt more alive. They made love twice, the first time urgently, the second time slowly and tenderly, gazing into each other's eyes. And for the first time in more than 3 years, the war slipped away. It didn't matter that Europe was being torn apart, that Paris was bleeding. The only thing that meant anything was this. Afterward, as she lay in his arms listening to his heartbeat, reality began to crash back in. Charlotte would be home soon, bringing the outside world with her. Thomas would leave one day, maybe even one day soon, and they were all in danger all the time. How she wished she could take his hand and stroll out into the open with him, walk across the bridges of Paris, stroll through the gardens and museums, kiss him for everyone to see. But it was impossible, and soon she would have to leave the cocoon of his arms and resume living in the real world. For now, though, she nestled closer, breathing in the scent of him, allowing herself to dream just for a moment of a future in which this could be their reality. Chapter 33. December 1943. Hanukkah began on December 22nd that year, and although it was too risky to have a menorah, Ruby, Thomas, and Lucien joined Charlotte in lighting a single white candle on the first night of the Festival of Lights.
"Blessed are you, Lord our God, King of the universe, who sanctified us with his commandments and commanded us to kindle the Hanukkah lights," Charlotte recited solemnly, her eyes closed, while the four of them held hands. "Blessed are you, Lord our God, King of the universe, who performed miracles for our forefathers in those days, at this time. Blessed are you, Lord our God, King of the universe, who has granted us life, sustained us, and enabled us to reach this occasion."
She opened her eyes and looked up with a half-smile.
"I might have gotten some of the words wrong. It was my papa who used to say the blessings."
"It sounded beautiful, Charlotte," Lucien assured her. "Should we say a prayer for your parents, too?"
Her eyes filled with tears and she nodded. Ruby waited for her to speak, but instead the girl closed her eyes and remained silent. When she opened them again, she looked somber.
"My prayers for them were in my heart. God knows what I was asking."
"Amen," Thomas murmured, and Ruby and Lucien followed suit.
They gathered each night to light the same candle again, and on the 25th, they celebrated Christmas together, too. There were no presents, no tree, no feast, but the four of them were together, and that felt, to Ruby, like the greatest gift she could ask for. They had become a family, somehow, and though she'd never been a very religious person, she couldn't help but feel that God was with them.
"God is present wherever love can be found," her mother used to say.
She didn't have a doubt that Thomas loved her, and she him, but what had surprised her over the past few months was that she could see the same feelings reflected strongly in Lucien and Charlotte. Before the war, she would have said that they were too young to know what love was. But they'd both lost so much, and had managed to find each other. It gave Ruby a feeling of hope, because she knew that if anything happened to her, Lucien would protect Charlotte with his life. He was a survivor, and he would make sure Charlotte lived too. The year 1944 arrived under a dark shadow, although there was the sense throughout Paris that the tide was turning. The Americans were involved heavily in the war now, and Lucien often brought news of illicit BBC broadcasts that spoke of Allied victories against the Germans and Italians. Berlin was being bombed regularly, he informed them, and the Germans were surely growing weary.
"It's just a matter of time now," he said again and again, grinning at Charlotte.
And Ruby and Thomas would exchange concerned looks, believing that the end of the war was on the horizon was certainly tantalizing. But it didn't feel realistic. Not yet. And Ruby hated to think of Charlotte harboring the false hope that within a few months her parents could be home. Thomas continued to spend his days hidden in the closet and his nights in Ruby's bed, but it was clear he was growing restless. He hadn't been outside the apartment in more than 2 months for fear of drawing attention. But Ruby had caught him staring longingly out the window more than once. As much as he loved her, part of him must have yearned to return to the skies. A few days after the new year, Lucien arrived at their door just past dawn, wearing a grim expression.
"I'm not just here for Charlotte," he said right away when Ruby opened the door, pulling a bathrobe around herself.
A shiver ran down Ruby's spine as she stepped aside to let him in, closing the door behind him.
"What is it?"
Lucien cleared his throat again, as if the words he needed to say were lodged there.
"There's word of a new escape line, Ruby. This one goes west, to the coast. It's put together by MI9, British Intelligence. It's a way to get Thomas out, if you want."
Ruby didn't respond right away. Of course she wanted to get Thomas out. Didn't she? After all, the sooner he left, the safer they all were. Yes, there would be risks involved in his escape, but she had to believe that a line established by MI9 would be as secure as possible. He wouldn't have to sleep in a hidden closet or stay confined to a small apartment while the world went on without him. And he could once again try to make a difference in the war effort. She knew those things would make him happy. But he would also be gone from her life, a thought that made her feel as if her heart was splitting in two. Though she'd known that the euphoria she'd felt over the past weeks couldn't last, she still wasn't prepared for it to end so abruptly. He'd promised to come back for her at the war's end, but what if he didn't survive the escape? What if he was killed in air combat a few months from now? What if someone came for Charlotte and Ruby died protecting her? What if the arrests of last January finally led back to her door? If they parted now, there was no guarantee that she'd ever see him again. But she had no choice, and neither did he.
"Ruby,"
Lucien asked into the silence. "I'm sorry," she refocused on the boy. His eyes were full of sympathy, and suddenly she wanted to cry. But she had to be stronger than that. "Of course. I'll tell him. Thank you."
"If you're not ready," Lucien's voice trailed off.
"But I must be. This is for the best, isn't it?"
"Yes."
They stared at each other for a moment. "Let me go see if Charlotte is dressed yet, and I'll tell Thomas you're here." When Lucien's knock had come, Thomas had hurried into the hidden closet, just in case. So when Ruby arrived back in her bedroom, it seemed for a moment like he was already gone. She could still see the imprint of his head on the pillow on the right side of the bed, still see the spot where the sheets had wrapped around him as he held her tight the night before. She sighed and shook her head before rapping lightly on the wall. "Thomas, Lucien is here. You can come out. He's found you a way home."
"You'll have to leave tonight," Lucien said 10 minutes later as the four of them sat in the living room, their expression somber. "There's a bistro, not far from here, where one of the men who runs the escape line will interrogate you, to ensure that you're really an RAF pilot."
Thomas looked confused.
"Who else would I be?"
"A few of the escape lines have been infiltrated by German spies. They need to be absolutely sure that you are who you say you are, before they take you to the next stop on the line."
"And where is that?"
"I don't know. I only know you'll be heading west. The escape is by water rather than by land."
Thomas looked surprised.
"By water?"
"Across the channel. From what I've heard, this plan was months in the making. But you'll be among the first to test it.
I've vouched for you, but the men involved in this escape line don't really know me. So they'll need to evaluate you for themselves."
"Of course," Thomas murmured.
I was hoping that you wouldn't mind if Charlotte spends the day with me today," Lucien said,
glancing first at Charlotte and then at Ruby.
"I have a lot of work to get done, and I could really use your help."
Ruby smiled at him sadly. Charlotte left with him every day. There was no need to ask her permission anymore. But she understood what he was saying. He was promising that Ruby and Thomas would have the apartment to themselves.
"Of course," Ruby said.
"Good." Lucien smiled encouragingly at her. "We'll be back at 5, so I can bring Thomas to the bistro."
"Thank you, Lucien."
Thomas stood and shook the boy's hand. Lucien stood too, and Ruby had the strange fleeting thought that they could almost be father and son, or at the very least, brothers. Charlotte stood and hugged Thomas tightly.
I'll be very sorry to see you go. We will miss you very much.
I'll miss you too, all of you.
Ruby could see tears in Thomas's eyes, and that ripped the hole in her heart even wider. Charlotte gave Ruby a quick peck on the cheek.
Are you all right? She whispered.
Ruby could manage only to nod. To speak would have been to open the dam. After saying goodbye to Lucien and Charlotte and closing the door behind them, Ruby turned slowly and found Thomas gazing at her with a sad smile.
What is it? She asked.
I was just thinking about what a beautiful future we're going to have, he said. You and me.
All at once there were tears streaming down her face.
Thomas, we're barely guaranteed tomorrow.
He took a few steps toward her and pulled her into his arms.
We just have to believe, Ruby. We have to believe that things will work out just the way they're meant to.
But how?
He was silent for a moment.
Let's talk about the life we'll have, he said. Tell me about what it will be like for us in California.
She pulled back to look at his face.
You're saying you'll come to California with me?
Unless you'd prefer to stay in Paris.
She thought about that and shook her head. Everything she'd come for was gone. The only thing that mattered here was Charlotte, and she was confident that if Charlotte's parents didn't return, she would be able to officially adopt the girl and move her to America after the war.
No. But what about England?
We can go there, too, if you'd like. Buy a farm, maybe? Move to the countryside? But wouldn't you rather go somewhere that hasn't been ravaged by the war?
Yes, Ruby whispered.
Will your parents like me?
Ruby laughed, wiping a tear away.
They'll love you, Thomas. You're exactly the kind of person they've always wanted for a son.
So tell me.
He touched her cheek gently.
Where will we live?
She hesitated, because to speak her dreams aloud would surely be to jinx them. But what if, instead, giving them voice made them come true?
My parents have a big piece of land, near Lancaster, she said. It's about 60 miles north of Los Angeles.
So, we'll be rubbing elbows with all the movie stars. Cary Grant and Humphrey Bogart will be around for dinner a few times a month.
Hardly. It's worlds away from Hollywood. But it's the most beautiful place you've ever seen. My parents live on the edge of a huge poppy field.
I remember. The photo in your old apartment. The one of you in the field when you were a girl.
Yes, the poppies bloom every spring, and it's like the whole world has come completely alive.
Sometimes, when I see sunsets here, I think of home, because the colors are the same, reds, oranges, yellows in every shade you can think of. It's truly like nothing you've ever seen.
Poppies, Thomas said, holding her gaze. You know what they mean, don't you?
Yes. Remembrance.
In Europe, after the Great War, poppies had become a symbol to honor soldiers who had lost their lives in battle. It wasn't something she wanted to think about now.
In Flanders fields the poppies blow, Thomas said softly, reciting the words to the famous John McCrae poem. Between the crosses, row on row.
My father used to read me that poem when I was small, Ruby said. He fought in the war, and he said once that he liked to look out at our fields and imagine a parade of his fallen brothers in arms. But the poppies always meant something else to me. When I was a little girl, I imagined fairies living among them, and even when I was older, I believed somehow in the flower's magic. I still do. It's a very special place. My parents always said that if I wanted to come home, they'd give me a piece of their land to build my own house on. I think they were very disappointed when I moved here instead. But it's not too late to fix that.
We could build a house together.
With a porch and rocking chairs?
And a fireplace with a big chimney for the nights when it gets cold.
Thomas paused.
Does it actually get cold in California?
It does, sometimes. Ruby smiled. And we'd have big windows in our bedroom that overlook the poppy fields.
And plenty of room for our children to play in the yard.
Ruby reached up and touched his face.
Children?
I want to have children with you someday, Ruby. If you want that too.
Of course I do.
She wasn't sure she'd ever felt happier than she did in that moment.
And if Charlotte's parents don't come home, Thomas said carefully, we'll adopt her.
You'd do that?
In a heartbeat, Ruby smiled.
Of course, that means we'd probably have to bring Lucien, too. We'll all live happily ever after. Thomas pulled her to him and kissed her.
We'll all live happily after.
They made love 3 times that day, staring into each other's eyes, whispering about the future, making promises that they both knew they might be powerless to keep. They fell asleep in the early afternoon, and Ruby woke a few minutes before 4. Thomas still had his arms around her, and his chest was rising and falling in an easy rhythm. For a long time, she just watched, committing to memory the shape of his jaw, the color of his eyelashes, the constellation of freckles that dotted his collarbone.
I'll see you again, she whispered. I know I will.
She woke him at 4:30, knowing that Charlotte and Lucien would be home soon. Already the light that streamed in through the bedroom window was turning apricot. Evening was on its way, and there wasn't enough time to say all the things she wanted to. But she knew there never would be. Perhaps that was what it was like, to love someone deeply. To feel that no matter how many moments together you were granted, there would never be enough. Thomas blinked at her a few times upon awakening, as if reminding himself that he wasn't in a dream. And then he kissed her once more, softly, tenderly.
I was thinking, he said, that we should also have a white picket fence. Isn't that very American?
She laughed. And maybe an American flag flying in the breeze.
And a British flag.
But of course. They smiled at each other.
Tell me more about the poppies, he said.
And as they rose reluctantly from the bed and got dressed, Ruby did just that. She described the way the poppies soaked in the desert sunshine, blooming the color of clementines as far as the eye could see. She told him about the soft purple owl's clover, the deep purple lupine, the tiny yellow wildflowers, and the buttery white cream cups that grew there too, a rolling field of watercolors stretching into the horizon. She told him about the mountains in the distance, the way everything looked carved out of the brilliant blue sky. It's like heaven on earth, she concluded. I can't wait to be there again. With you. They heard Charlotte's key in the lock, and Thomas pulled her to him once more.
Thank you, he said. Thank you for painting me a picture of the future. It will sustain me until the day I see you again.
And as Charlotte came inside, followed by Lucien, each of them wearing expressions of regret, Ruby thought with a strange surge of hope that perhaps this wasn't so senseless after all. Maybe this was the reason for the hell they'd all been going through. Maybe this was the life she was supposed to find all along. Chapter 34 January 1944 Seeing the pain on Ruby's face that evening as she said goodbye to Thomas was wrenching for Charlotte. After all, she was in love too, and she couldn't imagine being forced to let Lucien go. Now that she had realized what it was to feel that way, she had the clarity to see just how deeply Ruby's feelings for Thomas, and his for her, ran. In fact, Charlotte wondered now if Ruby had ever really loved Marcel, or if she'd simply mistaken a desire to escape the mundane and a need to be wanted for the real thing. Sometimes, two people are just meant for each other. It was as simple as that. And so Charlotte's heart broke a little as she watched Thomas whisper something in Ruby's ear, and Ruby whisper something back. Charlotte couldn't hear their words, and she supposed she didn't need to. She knew they were saying, I love you, in their own way.
It's time. Lucien said after the hands on the clock had ticked past 5.
Charlotte watched as Ruby and Thomas exchanged one last pained glance and finally pulled away from each other.
Thank you, Ruby said simply, looking at Lucien,
for finding Thomas a way out. Please promise me that you'll do your best to keep him safe.
I swear it on my life, Lucien said solemnly,
which made Charlotte love him even more. Thomas turned to Charlotte.
You take care of Ruby for me, all right? I know I asked you that once before, but I need to ask it again, now.
Charlotte reached out and grasped Thomas's hands in her own.
You don't have to worry. Just concentrate on getting home safely. We look forward to seeing you again.
He kissed her gently on both cheeks, then turned back to Ruby. They didn't say anything, they just held each other's gaze for a long moment, and then leaned in for one more kiss.
Be well, my love, Thomas said. I will see you again soon.
Ruby smiled through her tears.
Remember the poppies.
And then, far too soon, he was disappearing out the front door with Lucien, a hat pulled low over his eyes. He looked back, just once, and then he was gone down the stairs. Ruby and Charlotte held their breath until they heard the front door of the building open and close. Ruby choked back a sob.
He'll be back, she said, wiping her eyes.
And then, in the smallest of voices, she asked,
Won't he?
I know he won't rest until he's with you again, Charlotte said over the lump in her own throat.
Still, as Ruby retreated into her bedroom and shut the door behind her, Charlotte's heart was heavy. Only Thomas's return would bring Ruby back to life. Charlotte was still awake on the couch 4 hours later when Lucien came back. He knocked lightly on the door and slipped into the apartment without another sound.
She's asleep?
He asked, nodding toward Ruby's door.
I think so.
Lucien sighed.
It is done. He's in the hands of MI9 and their associates now.
Do you think he'll get home?
Lucien looked away.
I don't know. This will be the very first run of the new line. There hasn't been time to work out any problems.
Don't say that. Losing Thomas would destroy Ruby.
This has been months in the making.
I think it should be all right. Thank you, Lucien, for doing this.
I'd like to think I'm your family, Charlotte, Lucien said gently. And that makes Ruby my family, too. I'd do anything for you.
Charlotte nodded, too choked up to reply.
You know I will protect you, always, no matter what.
And I will protect you.
Charlotte had come to believe in her own power. No longer was she a little girl who had to wait for others to chart her course. She had transformed into someone else, someone she thought her parents might be very proud of.
Charlotte, Lucien said after a moment, there's something I must ask you, but I swore to myself that I wouldn't put you in danger.
What is it?
The new escape line. They need more people they can trust. I told them about you and Ruby, how you'd worked on a line in the past, how you have the perfect apartment for harboring pilots.
He looked at the floor and then back up at Charlotte.
They want to know if you and Ruby would consider providing a safe house for the new line, too.
Yes,
Charlotte said without hesitation. Lucien's expression was concerned, and Charlotte knew he was already regretting asking. But helping out on the line would give Ruby a reason to get out of bed each day.
Are you sure? This could be more dangerous than last time. The Nazis are cracking down.
It's a risk I'm willing to take, and I know Ruby will feel the same way.
Chapter 35 January 1944 There were 15 other pilots, most American, a few British, along for the journey west to Saint-Brieuc, a commune in Brittany situated on a bay that opened into the English Channel. As had been the case on his last journey out of Paris, Thomas was given a fake ID and a forged Ausweis travel permit as well as a change of clothes to make him look like a poor French farm worker. Giving up the garments he'd worn at Ruby's was more wrenching than he'd expected. Handing them over felt like giving away his last piece of her. But he was doing that anyhow by fleeing Paris, wasn't he? The men were divided randomly into groups of two or three, and instructed not to speak with one another. They traveled separately to the Gare Montparnasse, not far from Ruby's old apartment, and were warned to avoid eye contact, to stay silent, and to pretend to be asleep if officials passed through their compartment. The 250-mile journey through the French countryside was uneventful, and several hours later, all 16 men exited the train and were met by couriers. Some of the pilots were lodged in Saint-Brieuc, but some, including Thomas, were sent on via a small local train to Plouas, an even smaller town just up the coast. Thomas found himself with two American pilots in the tiny attic of a farmhouse a mile inland. Storms pounded Brittany for a week, and Thomas spent many hours sitting silently at the small attic window, which happened to look east to Paris, wondering about Ruby. Was she safe? Did she miss him? Had she meant the things she'd said about the future they'd share after the war? Each day, he made small talk with the other pilots, and with their hosts. He was the only one among the refugees who spoke French, so he slipped once again into the role of translator. Each night, he lay awake, staring at the low-beamed ceiling as wind whistled by the house, and thought about Ruby's field of poppies. They'd been in the cottage for nearly 2 weeks when their hostess, a young woman named Marie, climbed into the attic late one afternoon and said in English, "It is time." She turned to Thomas and, asking him to translate, quickly relayed the plan. They'd wait for full dark, then she'd take the pilots to another safe house. Later in the evening, they would be led down a steep cliff to a cove tucked against the rocks. From there, they'd be picked up by small British boats to take them across the channel. "Godspeed," Marie concluded in English, making eye contact with each of the men in turn. An hour later, she brought them through the darkness across muddy fields and country lanes to a small cottage that overlooked the moonlit water. There were 6 pilots there already, and the others who had been on the train from Paris arrived shortly thereafter. They were joined by a Russian and 2 Frenchmen, all of whom were running from the Germans, and would make the journey with them. The man who had interrogated Thomas in the bistro in Paris, who had introduced himself as Captain Hamilton, arrived just past 10:30 to explain the plan. By morning, he said, if all went well, the men would be back home.
"I'll need your IDs and anything personal that could identify you," he concluded.
Thomas lined up with the others to hand over the last of his effects, and then he waited. When Hamilton was done collecting everything, he went on to explain in a clipped tone exactly what would happen next. There would be 6 guides to lead the men to the cliff Marie had mentioned, and then they'd have to proceed, one by one, down the 100-foot drop to the beach, while making as little sound as possible.
"On the way there, we have to cross through fields patrolled regularly by the enemy," he added. "Be prepared to fight them off if it comes to that. We can't compromise the mission."
Just before midnight, they made their way across the road and into a field filled with thorny bushes. The men had been told to remain completely quiet and to hold hands, forming a silent human chain. They broke apart as they reached the cliff, and for a moment, standing on the edge of France, Thomas felt nauseated as he looked down into the blackness. The surf crashed below, loud and hungry, frothy white waves glowing in the moonlight. It was a long way down, and once he'd made the plunge, there would be no going back. The man in front of Thomas stepped to the edge of the cliff and disappeared in a rumble of falling rocks. Then it was Thomas's turn. The man behind him nudged him forward, and Thomas took a deep breath. This was it. He closed his eyes, and as Captain Hamilton had instructed, he lay on his back, extended his legs with his feet flexed, and pushed off. His body slammed down the cliff, and as rocks ripped through his clothes and tore his skin, he held a fist in his mouth to keep from crying out. He hit the beach with a thud, and with an aching back, he stood and moved into the shadows. Reed, one of the Americans who'd been sheltered with him at Marie's house, put a hand on his shoulder and squeezed once, a reassurance. Once they were all huddled in the hollow by the sea, there was nothing to do but wait. Captain Hamilton had been vague about the events that were meant to unfold, but Thomas had assumed there would be boats along to retrieve them shortly. Instead, the moon ascended higher and the tide continued to rise. One of the guides flashed a Morse code signal into the blackness at 1-minute intervals, indicating that they were ready for pickup. but no one came, and Thomas began to worry that something had gone wrong. In the distance to the west, the pillboxes of the Pointe de la Tour, a coastal guard post manned by the Germans, were just visible against the night sky. Thomas began to wonder about the logic of this plan. But then, after they'd waited for more than 2 hours, three pale dots appeared on the horizon, moving toward them at a rapid clip. As they drew closer, Thomas realized they were wooden surf boats, each manned by three fellows with oars. As they slid silently into the cove, the men aboard the boats exchanged greetings with Captain Hamilton and the guides, and they put away the submachine guns they were carrying. Quickly, they unloaded a large gasoline tank and 6 suitcases.
"Now," Hamilton whispered to the airman, gesturing for the one closest to the water to come forward.
Quickly, the escapees boarded the boats, and by the time Thomas turned back around to watch the beach slip away, Hamilton and the others were gone, as if they'd simply melted into the night. Soon, they were approaching a wooden-hulled motor gunboat, an MGB, that seemed to materialize out of nowhere. Quickly, the men were pulled aboard and escorted below decks, and the surf boats were secured. A single engine purred to life, and they headed north toward England, the cliffs of France vanishing into the blackness behind them. The small cabin exploded in a cacophony of voices as soon as the last man descended. There were cheers, expressions of disbelief, jolly complaints about the gashes many of them had sustained on their backs and legs from sliding down the cliff to the beach. But Thomas stayed silent. He knew he should have felt overjoyed to be heading home, but all he could think was that with each passing moment, he was farther and farther away from France, farther away from Ruby, farther away from the future he so badly wanted. He knew he didn't have a choice, that the only way back to Ruby was to return to England and rejoin the war. But right now, it felt like he was making the biggest mistake of his life. 6 hours later, as they pulled into Dartmouth Harbor, the rest of the pilots filed toward the front of the boat to watch as they approached land. Only Thomas turned the other way, looking southeast toward the country that was no longer visible across the channel.
"I'll come back for you," he whispered into the morning mist. "I promise."
Chapter 36. February 1944. The days without Thomas felt empty at first, but within a week, after several interviews with stern-faced MI9 men, Ruby began to host pilots once again. The new work kept her occupied and prevented her from dwelling on all the terrible things that could have befallen the man she loved. She cried herself to sleep, but during the day she put on a cheerful face for Charlotte and Lucien. In the mornings, she pretended not to see the concerned glances of pilots, who, hidden in the wall overnight, must have heard her sobs. The changes in Paris as the winter dragged on were unmistakable. The impeccably dressed Nazi soldiers and ingratiatingly polite officers were beginning to disappear, replaced by scruffy, ill-mannered German troops.
"They're sending the decent ones to the front now," Lucien commented one day. "It's a good sign. It means the Allies are winning the war, you see? They need all the best men to fight."
And while Ruby believed Lucien, the presence of the less civilized soldiers also made things more difficult. The Germans grew crueler and more violent in their reprisals. More and more frequently, French people were picked up on suspicion of being part of the resistance and were shot to death within hours, without any sort of due process. "The Germans were nervous," Lucien said, "because they were slowly losing their hold on France. But all Ruby could see was that they were tightening their grip." On the first Tuesday in February, she stepped out into the frigid cold to queue, as she always did, for her rations. She was armed with her own tickets, plus some of Lucien's forgeries, the only way she could provide enough food for Charlotte and the pilots. It was risky to use the fake ones, of course, but it was a necessity she had grown accustomed to. There was something different about this day, though, something ominous, and Ruby sensed it moments after she'd taken her place in the line. As the women around her rubbed their hands together, trying to get warm, and breathed out puffs of air, two German soldiers approached from the rear, and two from the front. The mundane chatter, about the icy weather, about naughty children, about the punishing shortages of coal, died out as the Germans began walking the length of the line, looking at each woman.